The J Talk Podcast.
Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, another hectic week with two top flight match days played. It was a slightly cooler weekend in Japan, and things cooled down a bit on the pitch, I suppose, too, after Wednesday's goals explosion.
Yeah, we kind of were greeted with the start of our YouTube excursion. You and Stuart did a fine job in midweek, and you were given some absolute crackers, goals galore. The Kawasaki-Cerezo game was a fine way to start off, and I think the league as a whole did need a bit of a breather this weekend, and it got it in a lot of games, but still some really interesting action.
Yeah, most heavily, and yeah, I shouldn't sell the weekend's games short. There was no shortage of action, of course, and indeed only one of the games ended goalless, so there were, a few teams knocking a few in, as we'll come to throughout this episode. We begin with our usual COVID-19 related housekeeping. Tosu versus Sapporo on the weekend, on schedule for Sunday in match day 12, was postponed, so that's three straight match days that Tosu haven't played now. And indeed, when they return to training, I believe on the 25th, so the day this podcast will be posted, the J-League decided that, they would be asking a little bit too much of the Tosu squad to front up straight away with a match the following weekend. So therefore, their trip to Shonan this weekend in match day 13 has also been postponed. So, Sam, Tosu have got a lot of catching up to do. No questions asked. Is there any other news I've missed in J-League COVID land before we move on to the action on the pitch over the weekend?
Yeah, there was one slightly worrying bit of news at Yokohama F. Marinos. I think one of their staff members tested positive late last week, so they had to then test everyone else in the squad and then make sure that there was no kind of close contact and whatnot. So I think they did 67 tests, 68, and I think all but one came back negative, which was good. There was one that was inconclusive, so that player or member of coaching staff, whoever it may be, had to go into a period of self-isolation, so missed the game at the weekend. But they thankfully have tested negative since, so the game went ahead. They won't have to postpone anything, which is great news for Yokohama, but especially with their upcoming fixture schedule. They couldn't afford to miss one game and have it rearranged, let alone if they faced anything like Tosu have, where they've had to take 2 or 3 weeks off. I think that would have caused plenty of headaches, both for the J-League and maybe for the AFC as well.
Yeah, no question. So, fortunate escape, you could say, for Yokohama. And they were able to play their fixture over the weekend and got a positive result, as we'll come to later. They moved into the top half of the table, indeed, did the defending champions. But we begin at the top of the table, and Kawasaki Frontale, it turns out that our runaway leaders are human after all. They had set a new J1 record with their 10th straight top flight win on Wednesday, a fact that evaded me during our YouTube chat with Stuart on Wednesday night. If I had had that news to hand, I certainly would have mentioned it. But anyway, they came from behind to win 5-2 at home over Cerezo Osaka, as we mentioned in the YouTube video last week. On Sunday at Nagoya in the 6 p.m. kickoff, they again fell behind for the fourth time this season, actually. But this time, there was no way back, and Mukanazaki's first goal of the season in the 44th minute, it proved to be the difference between the teams, as Nagoya finally proved that Frontale are fallible. But Sam, they could certainly feel justifiably hard done by, though, the leaders, as Hokuto Shimoda's follow-up shot in the 5th minute, after Hidemasa Morita's attempt had been cleared off the line by Shinosuke Nakatani, appeared to clearly cross the line before Nakatani hacked that effort clear. So, obviously, if Kawasaki had gone ahead in the 5th minute, we have absolutely no idea how the game would have played out. So, with that caveat aside, how impressive were Nagoya in finally taking down the leaders?
Well, first, I think you said in midweek that a few things fell for Kawasaki in that victory over Cerezo. They kind of got the rub of the green, but they definitely didn't here. They scored after 5 minutes, and really, that would have probably changed the game. It'd be a completely different outcome. But I thought Nagoya, after 20 minutes where Kawasaki were really on top, they should have scored that one and had a couple of other chances. But after that, I thought they were absolutely superb. They were terrific defensively, but then also going forward, they caused Kawasaki a lot of problems first half especially, and Mateus really grew into the game. I thought Kanazaki had his best game in many years, actually. It didn't show this necessarily at Tosu. He kind of ran around a little bit there, but really had no quality around him. But in this game, both for his goal, which was a sumptuous cross in from Mateus and a perfect header from Kanazaki. But after that, Kanazaki ran for 90 minutes non-stop, harrying defenders, making runs down the channel to create space for his teammates. Just so much effort he put in. I thought he kind of was like the epitome of what Nagoya were in this game. So much good effort. They defended for their lives. I thought, to a man, they were absolutely superb in defending that 1-0 lead. Just as you said, Kawasaki have come back from being a goal down in a number of games this season, and usually they have the quality to break down an opponent, but Nagoya was set up so well, and it was really, second half especially, pretty much a defensive masterclass from Nagoya, and they were fully deserving of the 3 points.
All right, then. Well, that's fantastic for Nagoya. They've been very Jekyll and Hyde in recent weeks, haven't they? But yes, they turned it on when the leaders came calling. After that goal, in inverted commas, for Shimoda in the fifth minute, there was also a good chance for Miki Yamane, who obviously loves to get forward from his right-back spot in the 17th minute. But then, yes, Sam, I haven't seen this game in full, but yeah, from the highlights, basically from that point on, it appeared that Grampus had the better of things. And I don't think Kawasaki can have had too many complaints at the, obviously at the quality of the goal, but also at the fact that, yeah, Nagoya had definitely been knocking on the door and had some decent chances. That Gabriel Xavier, he will still be scratching his head how he didn't score, but Jeziel threw his body in the way of his shot from inside the six-yard box. And then Jun Sung Ryong was called into action to parry a free kick from Mateus that was headed on at the near post. So, yeah, Nagoya certainly very, very good value for this win.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Kawasaki they were in fits and starts, really, for most of that first half. When they got going and when Mitoma got the ball, they looked like they would create a lot of chances. But Nagoya defended, they kind of weathered a storm for a little while. And then, as you say, second half of that first half, they were in complete control. The block from Jeziel, I don't think he knows anything about it, but it's crucial. And Kawasaki are a team that can defend well. They're known for their free-flowing attacking football, but when they need to, they can defend well, and they were defending quite well, and they had to for a lot of this first half. But yeah, it's just Nagoya are a team. Fikadenti ball has been maligned, I think, by a lot of people, and rightly so, for a lot of, especially at Tosu, where they were just really defensive and never really attacked. But with this team, with the attacking quality he has, they can mix it up, and they can, as the second half was, it was a pretty much full-on defensive display, and they worked really well. But this first half, they showed the quality that they have going forward. When you've got a Xavier, you've got Mateus, who was a brilliant again, another wonderful performance from him. I mean, you can't say enough good things about the kind of his delivery from either open play with his crosses, like for the goal. There are other occasions where there was a period of play midway through this first half where there were free kicks, corners, all fantastic deliveries from Mateus that Kawasaki were having to dig out from underneath their own crossbar and just really defend like their lives depended on it. And it was just really good quality from Mateus. There was one, a free kick that it was flicked on and Jung made a good save. So it was just kind of relentless from Nagoya in that first half, which was then flipped over in the second half. But it shows that Nagoya and Fikadenti, they aren't just this team that are going to sit back and try to grind out results. They've got all the quality and the willing to go forward and take the game to an opposition.
Yeah, and I tell you what, you could have got very long odds on this at the start of the season, but I know, obviously, Massimo Ficcardenti's reputation as a defence-first coach, but considering Nagoya's defensive struggles in the last four or five seasons, to see them now, with in terms of goals conceded anyway, the best defence in J1, well, that's certainly been a long time since Nagoya's occupied that mantle, and I realise there's been a little bit of a poison chalice in recent match days. Obviously, Cerezo came into their visit to Kawasaki with that mantle, jointly with Hiroshima at the time, and then they were spanked for five. But yeah, Grampus currently hold it, having conceded just 8 goals in their 11 games, and they nullified the leaders here. You did mention Kaoru Mitoma there, Sam, and we've obviously been giving him a lot of props in recent episodes, and rightly so, as he's sprung off the bench and banging goals in for fun in recent times. So he was obviously not his first start of the season, but in recent times he had been coming off the bench exclusively. So he was handed a start here by Toru Oniki. And, well, it sounds to me like, yeah, he was more on the periphery than we've come to expect in recent weeks. Is that simply a fact that he wasn't able to provide fresh legs off the bench and run at tiring defences? Or, yeah, was this just not the game for him?
I think it was just not the game for him. I think there were occasions, maybe two or three times in the first half, he looked to get on the ball. He's always got his confidence, but it wasn't quite working out for him. The link-upness with Damian wasn't quite there. I wonder if maybe him and Kobayashi just have a better understanding, because it didn't seem to work whenever he got the ball, and he was looking to bounce off Damian. It didn't quite happen for him, and it was kind of a bit reminiscent of the whole of Kawasaki in this game. Occasionally it worked for him and for the team, but for most of it, they were just a little bit off. I know they've been doing a lot of rotation as this season's gone on. It served them well, but they started here with what I would say was a second string, at least in midfield, where you had Tanaka and Oshima on the bench. So they started with Shimoda and Morita, who were decent players in their own right, but the actual interplay is not quite there with those two. It's not quite as sharp as it would be if you had Tanaka and Oshima in there. So I don't think that necessarily helped Mitoma in trying to get into this game, and Ianaga the same on the right-hand side. So I think they were just a little bit off, and Mitoma, like a lot of his teammates, weren't having their best game. And it was unfortunate for him because, as you say, he was on the periphery for a lot of this game, and then he picks up an injury in the second half. So, yeah, it was quite a disappointing day for him, but take nothing away from him. He's had such a good start to his J-League career. I mean, this is his first season. Of course, he's going to have the occasional game where he's not firing and getting goals and assists, but I just still liked the confidence that he had. Even if it wasn't going for him, he was always looking to try and get on the ball and make something happen. So I thought they were positive signs, even though it wasn't his best day.
Yeah, okay then. So just like on Wednesday, Toru Oniki made 5 changes to his starting 11. And obviously Kanazaki's goal came just before half-time. So Oniki reacted to that by bringing on Ryota Oshima and Reo Hatate at half-time. He called Yu Kobayashi off the bench on the hour. But, there didn't seem to be... while there were obviously Kawasaki, you know, plenty of tasty passing in the build-up, there wasn't a serious test or a serious question asked of Mitch Langerak, Sam, until he punched away Kobayashi's drive as the game entered stoppage time. So, as you said earlier, a defensive masterclass from Nagoya. They were really successful in limiting Kawasaki in the second half and keeping them at arm's length to protect that lead that Kanazaki had given them.
Yeah, they were brilliant. I mean, as games go, you normally want a high-scoring game or lots of shots on target. This didn't really have it, but it was just as interesting. I thought Mariama at centre-back was magnificent in the way that he commanded that defence. He had everyone in the right position. He then made a lot of crucial blocks. He made sure everyone was there to do that. They headed every cross away. They kept Langerak pretty well protected. He had, I think, there were 3 shots on target in the end, and one of those was pretty straightforward. So Langerak, what he had to do, he did well, but he didn't have too much of it to do. And I thought Yoshida as well at left back. There were a lot of times that crosses did just come through the box, and he was there with a last-ditch header away or a last-ditch clearance, or I think he made it 2 or 3 blocks. I think Nakatani did the same. They all were just at the top of their game in this one. That nothing was passing them, and yeah, it was just pretty much perfect from them so many times that on another day they'd just be a little bit out and then Kawasaki would have had a chance on goal. But every time that Kawasaki looked like they were threatening, there was a Nagoya body in to block it or to make a tackle. And as I said before, Kanazaki, who, I mean, he got his goal, but I would say that was nothing really compared to what he did in the rest of the game, because they have so much of the time back in their own half. They need someone up front to kind of harry the defence to make sure that they have a bit of respite. And he ran forever. He got whenever the ball was up to him, he'd run it into a channel, he'd give the team a little bit of respite, or he'd make challenges, he'd work his way back and help out. I just thought he was fantastic, and so were the rest of the defence. It was, yeah, as I said, this is the blueprint of how well you have to play to stop this Kawasaki team. And I don't think... I don't think Nagoya can play this well every week, and I don't think there are many teams in the league that can put up such a good positive defensive display.
All right, well, yeah, on Wednesday, Nagoya didn't rate a mention on the YouTube video that I did with Stuart. They weren't included in the poll for the game of the round because they were visiting bottom club Shonan, and it took until the 92nd minute for Grampus to win that game at the BMW Stadium 1-0 through an own goal. So after, I don't know how much of that game you were forced to sit through, Sam, but after that, did you think obviously they've kept a clean sheet away at Shonan, but they are the bottom side. After that game, did you think they had a performance like Sunday evening in them? And obviously Kawasaki were going in red hot favourites, having swept all before them in previous match day. So considering their recent results, I mean, the game before that, obviously they'd been extremely flat when they visited FC Tokyo and lost 1-0 themselves. So coming into this particular game after those two results, I can't imagine their supporters were too confident about them turning on a performance like they did. So, I don't know, could this sort of be the springboard for, we've talked about it, whether they'll be challenging for the ACL sports or not, or whether they'll fall away again as they have done in the last couple of seasons. But, yeah, surely a result like this would have to be a massive boon for their confidence.
You'd think so, but then again, they've beaten Urara 6-2, and you'd have thought that would have been a real confidence booster, and then they put in that terrible performance, really, against Tokyo, and they were not great against Shonan. They did just about enough. They never really have a good record, I don't think, against Shonan. I think they've relegated them a couple of seasons ago.
Of course they did, yeah.
But in terms of did I expect this performance, not necessarily. Nagoya are capable of very good displays, but this sort of defensive display, because this defence has been pretty much the same for a while now. Maruyama, Nakatani and Yoshida, and then it's Naruse right back at the moment. And they've always... they look okay, but they're always like... you think there's an error in there. There's always a bit of a mistake that comes with a Nagoya defence, especially under Kazama, and it's taken Ficcadenti a long time to try and rid them of the kind of the defensive frailties that a Kazama team will leave on any defence. So I've never seen this Nagoya team defend as well as they have, as consistently as they did in this game. So I don't necessarily think I expected that. I thought maybe if Nagoya were going to win, it would have to be in a bit of a shootout victory where they'd maybe win 3-2, 4-3. I don't think, as well as their defence has done this season, just as we saw against Cerezo, Kawasaki tore them apart, and they... we were all raving about how good defensively Cerezo were. So, no, I didn't see a 1-0 Nagoya victory in this, but I'm very glad I did, because I thought it was fantastic. But whether they will continue this going forward into the season, I'm not sure, because they had all the motivation to go and prove a point against this Kawasaki team, and I don't think that Nagoya always show that in every game. They may be up for the big games, but like the Shonan game in midweek, and I just think their performance levels fluctuate a little bit too much for them to necessarily have this consistent run that Kawasaki have had. I hope I'm proven wrong, because they can see how well this has worked, and maybe they can take that into other games. But again, there aren't teams like Kawasaki in the league. Maybe you've got Yokohama where you could play this sort of football and get that sort of positive result, but mainly Nagoya are going to be the team on the front foot for most of the game and look to dominate. So yeah, I don't think this performance will be replicated too often, but it's definitely a good blueprint for any team in the league. If they want to stop Kawasaki, this is how good you've got to be.
All right, well, Kobe is the next team to have a crack at Frontale. Kawasaki visit them on Wednesday. I believe they're away, aren't they, Kawasaki, or are they at home?
They're away, yeah. They're away to Kobe.
Yeah, that's right. So that's their match day 24 fixture that is being moved forward to accommodate Vissel's ACL schedule. So... well, yeah, obviously Kobe and Nagoya certainly different kettles of fish. Kawasaki, then, Sam, we would probably expect them to bounce straight back. But again, it's another game on top of another game on top of another game. So I guess Toru Oniki, well, you know, if he's glass half full, this could turn out to be a blessing in disguise for him, because he's now obviously he's got something to rev up his players with. Like, you know, this wasn't good enough. We've got to get this right as they head to Kobe. So I don't know. Yeah, they were slightly off their peak here, especially second half as Nagoya kept them at bay. But I don't know. Do you see any sort of a silver lining here? They have another game straight away, and hopefully to get this one out of their system.
Yeah, I think if you have one blip, I think you want to have a game as quickly as possible to rectify that. And I think they've got quite nice opponents in Kobe, in that they're not going to sit back and defend in the way that Nagoya are. They're going to come out and play. They're going to give Kawasaki chances with the way that they defend and the way their goalkeepers are. So I think it's an ideal one, because it's still a big game, Kobe. They've got big players. You'll have that feel about it. It's not like, with all due respect, say going to Oita or something, where it doesn't really feel like that. So I think they'll be looking forward to this game. I think Oshima will come back in, Tanaka, Kobayashi. It gives a fresher feel. It looks a little bit more dynamic and a bit more creative. So I think, I think it'll be an ideal game for them to get back into it. But I mean, if they lose that game, suddenly you've lost two in 4 days, and then it can be the complete opposite of the momentum that they've had coming into this, well, at the start of this season with the 10 games in a row. So it can go either way, but I think, getting this game out of the way, moving on to Kobe, they'd expect a better performance, and they'd probably, as it might be away from home, but I think they'd expect a victory against Kobe.
All right, of course, until Wednesday, their previous three huge victories had all come away from home. So, no fears on their travels for Frontale so far this season. But, yes, their lead at the top has been pruned slightly after their first loss of the season. So before we move off this game, Sam, we have spent quite a bit of time on it, but was there anything that you wanted to mention? Perhaps another unsung hero for Grampus on the evening, or a disappointing performance from you don't want to rub their noses in it, but from a Frontale player or anything like that? Or are you happy with the way we've covered the game? We can move on.
Well, I think just full props to the whole back line at Nagoya. I think Naruse as well, he was the younger fullback. He's got Ojai Suk, who's come into the team, well, into the squad, to give him a bit of pressure. He's not really a natural right back. He's kind of learnt it over the last few years. And he was going up against Kaoru Mitoma, who had all this hype about him, had been so good at the start of this season. And he performed really well up against him one-on-one. When you force Mitoma, he forced him inside, forced him into mistakes. And really, like, Mitoma has made a lot of really experienced right backs look silly so far this season, and Naruse is the first one really that's been able to stop him. So I'd say good props to him. The entire back line were magnificent, as was Inagaki and Schmidt in front of them. I thought just in general Nagoya played really well. For Kawasaki, it was a bit of an off day. I don't think defensively they played too badly. The goal they conceded, it was such a good ball, and I mean, Jung has no chance with the header, so I don't think I'd necessarily point a finger there. I just thought Damian wasn't really on it. Nothing really worked for him. Like, on his day, he is a terrific centre-forward, but the link-up play, I think, with Kawasaki is more designed to play with Kobayashi. It doesn't necessarily get the best out of Damian. So, I just think he was a little bit off, and just in general, they weren't quite at it, Kawasaki. Hopefully for them, this is just a small blip, which you're going to have throughout the season. They can bounce back on Wednesday, but there are maybe a couple of causes for concern, and it shows that they're not the finished article, so maybe that gives them extra motivation to kind of up their game once again.
Yeah, all right then. So well done again to Nagoya, and Kawasaki go again on Wednesday night, and they'll look to put things right after their first loss of the season. All right, well, Kawasaki's victims last Wednesday in match day 11 were, of course, at Cerezo Osaka, who stayed second in the table despite their 5-2 battering at Todoroki. Well, they certainly put things right on Sunday evening at home against Sendai. It was the Hiroshi Kiyotake and Tatsuhiro Sakamoto show. Sakamoto set up Kiyotake for the opener in the 19th minute to put Cerezo ahead. Koji Hatsusuka headed in first half stoppage time to equalise for Sendai, but then Kiyotake returned the favour on the hour mark, and Sakamoto finished smartly. Jakub Slowik tried his darndest, but they were two excellent finishes from Kiyotake and Sakamoto, perfectly placed into the corners of the goals, and just out of the reach of the big pole. So Cerezo supporters will have obviously been taken aback by the nature of their, or the size of the scoreline, I suppose, Sam, of their defeat on Wednesday night. They were able to maintain second spot in the table by shaking that result off and getting back to winning ways.
Yeah, I think you've got to credit Cerezo for the way they bounced back from that. I'm sure it's a quite shocking defeat for them. Their defence, I don't think they've seen five goals conceded. It might take them a couple of months to do that, so for them to do it in one game, that's got to shake them. And occasionally they were a little shaky in this game. A few errant back passes that Kim was making a bit of a mess of, but generally I thought they played really well. I think Sendai are probably the team that you want to play if you were going to pick any fixture to bounce back in. A home to Sendai is going to be towards the top of the list, and I thought for almost all of this game, Cerezo were very much in control. And as you said, it was the Sakamoto and Kiyotake show. Both players were fantastic, linking up together, cutting in from either wing. The two goals are sublime. Slovic is a very good goalkeeper, and he made a lot of good saves in this, but he had no chance with the two goals that went in against him. And a good result for Cerezo, I thought. Yeah, they played really well, those two especially, but generally they looked like the result hadn't affected them too much in midweek, and 2-1 I think flattered Sendai, because they got their goal from a corner towards the end of the first half, but otherwise they really didn't offer too much. I think they've not really shown anything so far this season, and I think maybe they've still got a few injuries. Cuenca was the big signing that they made over the winter, and he hasn't played a game yet. And Shimao Mate was their best player last season. He hasn't played a game yet. So maybe for them, once those two come back, then they can start to look a bit more, look like they might offer a bit more. But generally speaking, this season, they've been fairly easy to beat, and I think this was just another example of it.
Well done to Cerezo. Getting back to winning ways. And, Sakamoto continues to impress. So far, we haven't put the jinx on him, Sam, as we did Mitoma on Sunday night. So, long may his good form continue. And it was good to chat about him with Stuart as well last Wednesday night. So, they probably had every reason to question themselves as well when they conceded that equaliser at half-time. They might have had a few harsh words in the dressing room, because they had really dominated the chances in the first half, hadn't they? After Kiyotake put them ahead, there was a good chance for Sakamoto, and also Hiroaki Okuno, and Slovic saved well from both of them. But ultimately, Sakamoto was not to be denied, and Cerezo got the 3 points, and that means that the lead at the top for Frontale is 7 points after 12 games. Of course, the Grampus are 8 points back, but they do have a game in hand, and that is of course away at Hiroshima. So whenever that is rescheduled, we'll wait and see, but for now Frontale still well and truly clear at the top of the table. Next, we'll move on to events at Ajinomoto Stadium on Sunday evening, where FC Tokyo, who were second in the live table on Wednesday night until the 96th minute when Hayao Kawabe equalised for Hiroshima to send them sliding back down to sixth. Well, they moved back up a couple of spots on Sunday night after a ultimately comfortable 3-0 home win over bottom club Shonan Bellmare. But, well, yeah, they didn't have things all their own way. In fact, at 0-0, Yuto Iwasaki had a good chance to fire Bellmare ahead that was presented to him on a silver platter by the often wasteful Ryoya Ogawa. But ultimately, yeah, Iwasaki fired his shot over the bar, and then about 10 minutes later, Kensuke Nagai fired Tokyo ahead from close range. Sam, interestingly, for me as a Tokyo supporter and for all other Gasmen fans out there, there were a couple of debutants called on by Kenta Hasegawa here, and also a return for Akihiro Hayashi in goal. But yeah, in terms of players handed their first J1 starts, we saw Takumi Nakamura at right back and Manato Shinada in central midfield. I don't know how much of this game you've managed to get through as we record on Monday night, but if you've seen a bit of it, I'd be interested to get your thoughts in both of them, because I thought Nakamura especially was very bright.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think I've seen Nakamura a couple of times in Levan Cup games, and he's always looked pretty good, actually. He's only 19, and you need someone to step up into that Maruya role. You've tried Hotaka Nakamura, who I think has also played quite well when given the chance. But I thought, yeah, Takumi is going to be very awkward for me over the next couple of months, trying to differentiate between the two right-back Nakamuras. But yeah, Takumi, I thought, acquitted himself really well. I thought his positioning was generally quite good. He was always, yeah, in the right place. I thought defensively one-on-one, he looked pretty solid. And I thought, yeah, as a debut goes for him, I thought he did really well. And I've usually been impressed with him, actually, in the Levan Cup games. It's maybe against a lesser opposition when everyone's rotating, so maybe it's slightly easier. But yeah, as a teenager, I think he looks the part. And Shinada, I mean, I haven't seen too much of Shinada before. I think he's another one that's going to benefit from the closure of the FC Tokyo under-23s in terms of the amount of first-team football that he should be able to get. I think he was on the bench a couple of times last season, maybe a couple of weeks ago as well. And yeah, I just think he adds a little bit more to in terms of a cut and thrust going forward with Abe there as well. We have no Takahashi in this game, and he's had a bit of a mixed season. I think sometimes, because Tokyo are really built for this fast counter-attacking, and I don't think Takahashi is necessarily built for it, and same with Keigo Higashi. So to get the youngsters in, a bit like Shinada, who's, yeah, a positive player, I think it really helps the way that Tokyo want to play. So yeah, I thought, again, he's only young, I think he's only 20, and I thought he had a very good debut, saw out the 90 minutes, and I think, yeah, it definitely helped the way that Tokyo were playing. I thought this game, Shonan, just when I see Tokyo versus Shonan, I don't know if it's the same with you or other Tokyo supporters, but I worry for Tokyo in games against Shonan, teams of that nature. I just think these are the games that Tokyo usually slip up in, and it looked like for a long period of that first half that maybe it was going to be the same again. But I thought to come away with a 3-0 victory in the end, I thought, yeah, good credit to Tokyo, and I thought they played well. What were your thoughts about the two players you mentioned and Tokyo as a whole kind of getting over that first 40 minutes or so?
Well, yeah, as I say, Nakamura was, yeah, very bright and, yeah, certainly not hesitant to go forward as well, which was really positive to see. He, yeah, didn't need any invitation. He was, yeah, happy to overlap. Had Tokyo's first significant chance in the sixth minute, and then, yeah, drew another save from Kosei Tani in the Shonan goal shortly after that as well. So yeah, he was right on the front foot, which was good to see. But yeah, as you mentioned, yeah, he was also pretty reliable defensively, which is obviously what he's in the team to do. So that was also a positive. Yeah, Shinada, I guess you can understand he was a little bit sideways and backwards, a little bit too much for me, especially first half. But yeah, he did try and play a couple of balls through to meet some runs of teammates further forward. They didn't always come off. In fact, I can't think of one that actually did. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you can't fault him for trying. And overall, to get, as you said, to get 90 minutes in his legs in his first J1 start, I mean, he will have come away absolutely buzzing from that, I'm sure. Although I'm sure he will have been somewhat critical of himself, and he'll know where he would like to improve when he gets another chance. But yeah, I mean, in terms of his defensive positioning as well, I mean, yeah, there wasn't a lot that you could tell the difference between, a typical Yojiro Takahagi performance compared to what Shinoda offered. I mean, yeah, for me, Takahagi these days, it's mostly he's a body that can get in the way of things, basically. I mean, yeah. He's certainly not the player. He hasn't got the legs that he once had. Obviously, was never the fastest, but in his Tokyo central midfield career, he's been a steady hand rather than a real attacking force, I suppose. So it's in that vein. Yeah, Shinoda acquitted himself fairly well, and yeah, you didn't really notice that Takahagi wasn't there. I mean, elsewhere in the team, I was a little bit disappointed with Hirotaka Mita, but I guess that's a kind of a running theme, and he's we had so many hopes for him when he came back, but these days it's kind of hard to see. Apart from his set pieces, which continue to be pretty decent, it's hard to see he can call himself first choice when everybody's fit and available. But I was actually thinking to myself, Sam, during the first half, that while I'd been quite happy with the way Kensuke Nagai had been playing, he really needed a goal, and then one presented itself on a plate to him in the 37th minute when the Shonan keeper Tani attempted to punch clear a corner, but it rebounded straight off one of his defenders, and Nagai was able to hook home from inside the 6-yard box.
Yeah, I think Tani wanted Nagai to get a goal as well, but the looks of it, he was nowhere near this corner. And it was a shame for Shonan, really, because they performed pretty well in the first 42 or whatever minutes it was, and it was good reactions from Nagai, that kind of a poacher's effort, got his goal, which, hopefully for him it'll get him on a good run of goals, because since coming back from his injury at the start of this season, it's not really worked for him in front of goal. I think, as you say, I think he's played well, and the link-up that you've got with that front three with Oliveira and Leandro, I think, is working quite well, especially when you take the lead and the devastating counter-attacks that you have, especially as we see for the third goal. I think that is Tokyo at their best. So, but I thought Shonan, it's been the story of their season, really. A lot of games they've been in it, and it looks like they could get something out of it. And then maybe a Cho team would always grind out that result. I think we've said it for years now that Shonan are the team that we always think are going to get relegated, but the team will just pull a result out of nowhere. And this season, they haven't quite managed it. Whether it's because that there's no relegation to fight for, there's just quite that small lack of urgency that would have got them a point otherwise that's not there this time, I'm not sure. Maybe it's down to a lack of quality, because they do keep losing their better players. But yeah, it's just not quite worked for Shonan. I thought they were in it for so long, but second half, Tokyo with a better team, they looked... bar maybe there was a Tarik effort that Hayashi, who was back in goal, made a really good save from. I don't know if that sort of short spell out of the team has kind of got him back to it. I don't think he was playing too badly before he was dropped, to be honest. And I think Atano did well, but I think Hayashi, on the whole, is a better goalkeeper, and if you're going to try and qualify for the Champions League, I'd be much more confident with Hayashi in the goal rather than Hatano.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about your man, Tariq El-Yanoussi, Sam, because that was it. It wasn't for Shonan. I mean, obviously at 0-0, Iwasaki had a good chance to give them the lead. But then, 10 minutes into the second half, for El-Yanoussi, who had come off the bench at the break, was played through by Naoki Ishihara. And from the edge of the box, I mean, it's a stunning reflex save from Hayashi, but it's straight at him, really. I mean, El-Yanoussi, I don't know, with a lack of awareness to realise that he had a little bit of time to set himself and pick his spot. I mean, obviously he hasn't been scoring many himself. So, yeah, obviously confidence would be an issue for him, and he's probably just decided to hit that as hard as he could. But, yeah, he would obviously love to have that chance back because, yeah, he really did have more time than I think he realised.
Yeah, I think he's only really managed 4 starts this season. They've kept him on the bench for long periods, and to be honest, the level of striker that's playing ahead of him isn't great, so I can understand he might not be having the confidence, and when you don't have that, you do snatch at your opportunities, and generally, that's what he has been doing. He hasn't, like, he scored that one overhead kick, but that is, it was kind of an instinctive goal, isn't it, an overhead kick? It wasn't like he's bearing in on goal and has to make a decision, and that's kind of where he's been let down, which is weird given the amount of experience he's got. He's a Norwegian international, he's 32 years of age. You'd have thought he's been there, done that, and he'd be able to be the one that shows the composure for Shonan, because Iwasaki, for example, is only young, and you can kind of forgive him for maybe not being quite on it, going through on goal, not quite having the composure. But El Yunusi has been really disappointing. I don't want to be too harsh on him, because he's had to move to Japan, which is a complete culture shock to what he's used to. He's had to do that within the realms of a pandemic, so he might not have been able to get family over. You don't know what goes on. It's difficult enough to settle in Japan without all this going on. Plus, he is the only foreign player in that squad, which is weird for a J-League squad. So as welcoming as they might be to El Yunusi, he hasn't necessarily got that friendship group that he can immediately enter into. I don't imagine he speaks much, if anything, of Japanese. So it's a difficult environment for him to come into. But just looking at his work on the field, it's not been to the level that Shonan would have expected, he would have expected, and I hoped for at the start of the season.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, it took Tokyo until the last 10 minutes to kill the game off, but Diego Oliveira played a 1-2 with Leandro and finished in off Tani to make it 2-0 in the 84th minute. And then in stoppage time, as Sam mentioned, Tokyo countered off a Hayashi punch from a Shonan corner. Arthur Silva almost left the ball behind in midfield, but he played it ahead to Leandro, who was looking for his fellow Brazilian Adailton before Adailton's fellow sub, Taichi Hara, nicked the ball off Adailton's laces and finished into the corner for his, technically, according to the J-League, his second J1 goal of the season, Hara, but as we all know, it's his first proper one, as, yeah, for some reason, the J-League decided to give him the own goal at the end of the Tosu game as his first. But, yeah, he will have been far happier with this one. And, yeah, so 3-0 to Tokyo. It finished. This Wednesday, Tokyo are also in action as they are, along with Kobe, who we mentioned, host Kawasaki. Tokyo host Kashima in their match day 26 clash being moved forward, of course, from November. Tokyo and Kobe are two of the three J-League representatives in the ACL. So, yeah, if that competition ultimately goes ahead, then, yeah, we're expecting Tokyo and Kobe as well as Yokohama, which we'll come on to in a minute, of course, yeah, to be involved in October, November time. Yeah, finally then for Shonan, it's a 6 straight losses. They have a next weekend off, as we mentioned at the top, when they were scheduled to be home versus Tosu before they host Kobe in match day 14. So, yeah, plenty of work to do on the training pitch for the Belmare playing squad, and we'll see how they go, yeah, hosting Vissel the weekend after next. All right, well, yeah, that's 3 of the 8 games from match day 12 reviewed. Sam and I will take a very quick break, and we'll be back after that to wrap up the rest of the games. Welcome back, and next we'll cover the 2 draws from the match day, both interesting games in their own rights. We'll begin down in Kyushu, and Oita hosting Kashiwa Reysol. This ended 0-0, which was mainly notable for the fact that Michael Olunga did not score. Yes, hold the back page. After he had netted in 7 straight games, netting, of course, 10 in total in those 7 J1 matches. Olunga was, finally corralled by the Trinita defence, Sam, in a, yeah, as I say, a game that finished 0-0, but still had, yeah, plenty of talking points and, yeah, decently end-to-end, I suppose, for a 0-0.
Yeah, it was pretty open. Actually, I think Oito had the more clear-cut chances and probably should have won it right at the end. Olungo had a couple of half chances, didn't really test the goalkeeper too much because he was on, obviously, on this fantastic run. A goal here would have equaled the J-League record, actually, with consecutive games scoring. It would have been 8 if he'd done it. I don't know how good your knowledge is of the J-League. I'm going to give you a question without notice. Do you know who holds the record of 8 goals in, well, scoring in 8 consecutive games?
I do not. But all the only name I can think of is Masashi Nakayama, Gon Nakayama from Jubilo Iwata is the only name I could think of, but I'm probably wrong.
No, well, my research tells me I have no idea about this, but back in 97 it was Julio Salinas, a Spanish player for Yokohama Marinos, who managed it in that season. So yeah, it was unlucky for Olunga. I thought maybe this was, he was going to do it today against Oita and he would have fancied his chances as well, but yeah, it wasn't to be. But fantastic record anyway for Olunga, who's had a terrific season.
Yeah, most definitely. And I tell you what, Sam, we talked obviously on Wednesday, and you mentioned it earlier as well, about Kawasaki having the rub of the green in some of the goals they scored against the Cerezo on Wednesday night. I tell you what, I don't know what the opposite of having the rub of the green is, but poor old Kohei Issa, when he has the ball in the net for Trinita in the 35th minute, but the goal has to be ruled out because his teammate Yuki Kagawa is lying on the floor in an offside position on the edge of the 6-yard box, and the ball deflects in off Kagawa's backside. I mean, that is that's absolutely brutal on Issa. He certainly won't be buying a lottery ticket this week, I don't think.
No, really cruel on him, because I think without the deflection, I think he scores anyway. So it was, really harsh on him. Obviously, Kago can do nothing about it. He's just fallen over and just happens to be there in the way of it. But it was just that those sorts of things didn't go for Oita in this game. There was the moment right at the end of the game where it was Kago, actually, who made the cross across the 6-yard box, and Fujimoto, the substitute, slides in, and he gets a slight touch on it, but it's not enough. Any more contact, and Oita would have gone 1-0 up late on. But yeah, it wasn't to be for Oita. I thought, I especially, and maybe you as well, have kind of criticised Oita for the way that they've played for long periods this season, but maybe the last 2 or 3 weeks they've really booked their ideas up there. Takagi was dropped from goal where he was playing, I don't know what he was playing, but Moon has come in, he looks a lot more solid, he's not taking as many stupid risks, and the whole team have kind of switched on again, which they haven't done at the start of this season. They look a lot better for it, and this was another good result to go with the win over Yokohama they've had recently, and they're starting to look a little bit more like the team that performed so well last season. But for Kashua, they will be disappointed not to have won this game. They'd see Oita as a team that they should be beating, but they played okay, but didn't really create the level of chances you would expect. And occasionally when they haven't played that well, it's been up to Olunga to kind of dig them out, and he just couldn't on this day. And yeah, that was the reason they didn't score, really, because they've just been a bit too heavily reliant on Olunga in games this season. And without him scoring, yeah, it didn't look like Kashua were really going to score. And I thought Oito were the better team on the day and probably deserved a victory.
Yeah, and obviously, they had the ball in the net, didn't they? But yeah, poor old Kohei Issa. Yeah. As I said, the goal obviously correctly ruled out, but really, really unfortunate for him. But Kagawa, some terrific deliveries from him from in on the left. And as you say, yeah, very, very unlucky that Fujimoto couldn't make a better contact on his cross in stoppage time. And overall, from the highlights, this looked quite entertaining. And Olunga unable to score, but he did have a few chances, especially in the second half. But Moon Kyung Gun was up to the task on a couple of occasions when Olunga wasn't wasteful himself. So a good point for Oita, and ultimately Kashiwa slightly disappointed, I suppose, but they'll realise that on the evening they probably didn't do enough to deserve the 3 points, and will be content enough with one I suppose. All right, well, it was a big occasion at the Kashima Soccer Stadium on Sunday night. It was the final game of Atsuto Uchida's storied career after his decision to retire at the age of 32. And, well, thankfully for him, his Antlers side was able to rescue a point at the death in their clash against Gamba Osaka that finished ultimately 1-1. Uchida, 7 years total at the start and end of his career with Antlers. 7 years, of course, famously with the Schalke of the Bundesliga, and a total of 74 caps for Japan. A number of honours for Uchida, but ultimately, Sam, I guess when you're forced into retirement at the age of 32, while he does have a lot of medals in his cabinet and a lot of accolades, obviously, when he looks back, I mean, obviously, we're very proud of the career he's had, but I wonder if he'll allow himself a few minutes to think about just how far he might have been able to go if the injury bug didn't befall him.
Yeah, I do think it's a case of what could have been with Uchida, as well as good a career as he had. I mean, not many players will get 74 caps for Japan, but I mean, he'd be well over 100 now if it wasn't for the constant knee issues that have plagued his career, which is such a shame. I've not really been able to get to see the best of Uchida. Obviously, when he came back to Kashima, it was after so many patella tendon issues and various other knee complaints and thigh injuries and so many things he had. But you could tell that season when Kashima won the Champions League, Uchida was there. He kind of only played every now and then, but he was always saved for the big games. He was always, yeah, it just brought a level of class to that defence, a level of know-how and experience, and he was a terrific player when he was able to play. But yeah, just there's so many injuries that have really blighted his career. I mean, how good was he at his peak, would you say, or when he was first at Kashima, how good was he, and could he have come on to be maybe a Japan captain or an all-time legend for Japan? Because as good as his career has been, I don't think he's going to be quite at that top level, and it's really, I think, just because of the injuries.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think a good illustration of how good Uchida was early doors, Sam, is that basically he turned Yuto Nagatomo from a right back into a left back. When Nagatomo came through at FC Tokyo, he was a right back, and Yuhei Tokunaga shifted over to the left to accommodate him. But basically, Nagatomo wanted to get into the Japan team, and he knew that Uchida was going to be there for the next 10 to 15 years, or at least that's what he assumed. And then, basically, he started playing at left back for Tokyo. So Uchida was, when he burst onto the scene, he was an absolute breath of fresh air. Three straight J1 titles from 2007 to 2009. He was a key part of that team. Obviously, an Emperor's Cup in there as well. And he was a fixture in the Japan national team. And in that era, he was a very important part of that setup. And I don't think any of us were surprised when he moved over to Germany. It was definitely the right time for him, and it's just such a shame that his career was curtailed. I mean, you know, his record ultimately speaks for itself, despite the time that he's missed through injury. I mean, twice in the J1 best 11, and twice as well in the Bundesliga team of the season. I mean, you can't do much more than that with Schalke, the German Cup, and a German Super Cup as well. So. For Antlers, he definitely goes down as one of their all-time best players, in my opinion. That's obviously a very long list. They are by far the most storied team in J-League history. But, Uchida's name is well and truly up in lights there at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, and no questions asked. And, he's probably got a bit of a shock here because he was called into action in just the 16th minute, wasn't he, Sam? He probably thought he was going to spend most of the game reclining on the bench and maybe come on for the last 10 minutes or something and get a nice hand from the Kashima faithful. But, yeah, Rikuto Hirose went down with a hamstring injury, and, Uchida was on in the 16th minute.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be with you. I think he was thinking, oh, I'll get a nice run out at the end of the game. I'll take my applause and we'll move on. But yeah, straight into the action, thrown into it. And he's played very little football, really, hasn't he, for the last couple of years. And especially this season, I think he's had maybe two or three starts and he's not looked too great. So to be thrown in when he's pretty much got retirement very much at the front of his mind, he thinks, yeah, I don't have to do too much today. But thrown into such a big game and, they were 1-0 down, weren't they, at the time? So it's come into a baptism of fire for Uchida. And yeah, I don't think it will go down as his greatest performance. I thought he played okay. And it looked like Kashima, since he came on, they looked a lot better. They looked a little more solid defensively. It was down Hirose's side, wasn't it, that the goal came from? Kurata down the left-hand side finding Onose with his cross for 1-0. So, yeah, they sort of steadied the ship with Uchida there. And I thought for a final game, yeah, it was a solid performance. Hopefully for him that he can continue in the game. I know for the last couple of years he's doing a lot behind the scenes in the coaching department for Kashima, doing a lot of work there. So hopefully for him he might move into that setup and then, who knows, maybe go on and be a manager someday, because he's such a good player, such a good knowledge for the game. You want to keep that in Japanese football. So hopefully, yeah, he goes on to a successful career in coaching or whatever he wants to do. But because, yeah, fantastic servant he's been to Kashima around Japan despite the injury. So yeah, I thought this was a good send off for him. I'm really happy for him that his team got the late equaliser, and I thought the send off as well was very nice to the end. We've seen a lot of these ceremonies in Japan where a player's played three games, goes off to Europe and gets this massive send off. So it was nice to see one that actually really meant something. You got so many people send messages. Zago was there. I know Schalke did a lot over the weekend in their social media, just a lot of clips about Schalke, a lot of messages for him. So yeah, that was really nice to see.
Yeah, most definitely. So yeah, Endless did snatch a point right at the death when Tomoya Inukai powered home a header from Ryotaro Araki's cross. And interestingly as well, Sam, it was obviously this piece of information very much took a back seat on the evening, but it was very interesting to see Gen Shoji back at the Kashima Soccer Stadium, of course, for the first time in a rival kit, as he is, of course, now plying his trade for Gamba Osaka. Just as a quick aside, we obviously don't want to completely ignore Gamba here. How has Shoji looked since he's been introduced into the team? Obviously, it did take a large stretch of the season before he was involved, but how's he looked so far?
I'd say solid, if unspectacular. He's coming off almost an entire year with injury, so it's going to take him a bit of time to get up to speed. And they haven't really had a settled back three with him. I think this was only the second time that he, Kim and Miura have played as that back three, so the understanding is going to take a little while. But in terms of, he's come through the games, last three games that he's played, he's come through 90 minutes, which can only be a positive. But I just think it's going to take him a little bit of time to get back up to that level, because maybe 2 years ago, I think we were both kind of in agreement that Shoji and Tomiyasu was going to be like the Japan centre-back partnership for a decade or something. So hopefully for Japan's sake, Shoji can get back up to that level. I'm not sure if he ever will, because he had a couple of injuries. And if you've got a niggling ankle injury that's cost you a year of your career, then you just fear that maybe that's going to go again. He's going to try and get that out of his mind. You've got to play without that fear of injury, and hopefully he will do. I think he's looked decent, but yeah, I think there's more to come for Shoji.
And before we move off this game, then obviously Gamba at the end of the day are extremely frustrated to drop 2 points in the 95th minute. So they will have returned home very much with their tails between their legs, I think, after this. Overall, was their performance worthy of a victory, do you think, or would they have been slightly fortunate considering the number of the higher number of chances that Antlers had on the evening?
Yeah, I think this game has followed a similar pattern to a lot of Kashima games, in that they fall behind but generally look the better team, and they've managed to claw out results and points a bit like this in previous games. And I thought they were fully deserving of the point at least. I don't think Gamba did enough from 1-0 up to really claim victory. They've caused a couple of problems for young Oki, who was in goal here in the Kashima goalkeeper roulette, and he kind of made a couple of mistakes and just Gamba couldn't profit from it. But in general play, I thought Kashima were the better team for long periods of this game. And again, it just doesn't always work for them. They're still trying to find that right balance going forward. But eventually, they worked so hard, they were deserving, I think, of the 95th minute winner. It came from a weird source in Inokai, powering ahead through in open play. But yeah, he took his opportunity to go forward and yeah, plonked his header past Higashiguchi, who had another fantastic game. Like, this season, I think I've mentioned it before, the goalkeeping has somehow stepped up a level in general. We said Slovic earlier, and Higashiguchi is one where, like, yeah, he's obviously got such experience, Japan international, and he's just been at the forefront of Gamba at the moment. So I think, yeah, another fine few saves. I'm sure we'll still have Eiji Karashima in goal when it comes to the next Japan international team. But I think Higashiguchi, and the same with Nishikawa, actually, the experienced Japan internationals who still think they've got something to offer for the national team, I'm sure. And they're both putting in fantastic displays, and they're doing all they can. I thought, yeah, Higashiguchi again kept Gamba in this game for a while, but there was nothing he could do with the final header. It was just right in the corner. So, yeah, I think deserving point for Kashima.
Yeah, all right then. So, once again, a big otsukare-sama to Atsuto Uchida on a terrific career. And, his side snatching a point at the death. So, yeah, Gamba Osaka very frustrated to let a goal in late on. Well, that had been a recurring theme for Kobe in their previous two games. They'd let in a very late equaliser again to Takashima two match days ago before losing at the death at home against Reysol on Wednesday night. But this time they had the last laugh. It wasn't quite as late on as in those two games, but Hotaru Yamaguchi's deflected volley in the 82nd minute won them the game at Urawa. Kobe claiming a 2-1 victory. Keijiro Ogawa had given the visitors Vissel a 15th minute lead when he basically walked Takuya Yasui's driven cross from the left into the net in the 15th minute. But just past the half hour, Thomas Deng smashed an unstoppable first-time drive, in off the post from 30 yards. Absolutely stunning strike. If you haven't seen it, seek it out, listeners. And Deng celebrated his first league goal for Reds with an acrobatic backflips combination that has put him on the radar for the Australian gymnastics team for Tokyo 2021. Absolutely stunning stuff from Deng. Yeah, first the shot and then the gymnastics. Absolutely tremendous stuff. In a chance-filled second half, I could be here for the next 5 minutes listing off all these chances. Kyogo Furuhashi hit the post. Shinzo Kuroki shot wide on the stretch. And the Kobe defender, Ryuho Kikuchi, had to head Koya Iruki's shot to safety. But then finally, as we said earlier, Yamaguchi had the last laugh. His volley from inside the D deflected off the unfortunate Deng and past a stranded Shusaku Nishikawa to earn Vissel a first away league win over Reds in 9 years. And after the late blows they had taken in the previous two match days, Sam, I don't suppose we can deny them the joy of celebrating Yamaguchi's winner.
No, absolutely not. And this is, it was kind of, you saw the team coming out then at the start of the game, and you see there's no Iniesta, there's no Vermaelen, Sakai's on the bench, Yamaguchi's on the bench, Douglas is on the bench. It just looks like, okay, are they throwing this game? Are they not playing their full players? But it was just, it's just kind of Kobe, isn't it? They're kind of an enigma, and they played a young, kind of vibrant team, and it paid off for them. They looked a little bit like, when you play Iniesta, as great a player as he is, a lot of the football is quite slow and in front of a defence, and generally speaking, teams have been able to deal with it. But for a particularly terrific through ball from Iniesta or a little bit of magic from Furuhashi. But in this game, there were players that just really wanted to attack. They wanted to kind of break the lines. They got their goal through Ogawa, who was one of those. They played Furuhashi as well. And there was a lot of the kind of, they were putting pressure on the Urawa defence, which, as we know, can buckle under pressure and did so in this game. And I thought they were, it was an open game. There were chances either end. I think both teams would have might have an argument to say that they deserve the victory over the other, but I thought Kobe, considering the team that they put out, but they just fought forever. They Yasui, who Lionel Piquet mentioned a couple of weeks ago, he came in to start. He has got another victory from a starting position, which is great for him. I thought he looked terrific in central midfield. And I thought, yeah, Kobe deserved something out of the game. It was a bit, maybe the 2-1 was slightly flattering, but I think they worked really hard, and yeah, they have every right to celebrate this victory. For Reds, they'd be very frustrated that they haven't won this game. If you're a Reds player and you see that team, you'd expect to beat them at home, and yeah, they just weren't quite on it again. They rely a bit too heavily on Leonardo at the moment, and yeah, when he doesn't score the goals, maybe they don't have enough. They have chances. There was an arguable penalty shout. I think you mentioned Kikuchi heading off the line, but I think just before then, Kuroki was sent through, and he goes round Maekawa, and there is a coming together. The J-League highlights package quite helpfully doesn't show any replay, so who knows with that. Usually when that happens, it's probably a penalty, and they just don't want to mention it. But so there were chances for Reds, but it just didn't work out for them. And they've got, as well as they look like they're doing in terms of the table, I still don't think they've played very well all season. And I think there are a few changes that need to be made there. I know that, I think today as we record, they've just let Mauricio and Fabrizio go to Portimonense on loan. So that frees up space for a foreign investment. And that's definitely been reported, at least in the Portuguese media, that Reds are trying to free up places for some foreign signings. So that'll be interesting to see what happens there, and if they can bring in a bit more quality that will help them maybe push on for a Champions League spot. But at the moment, yeah, they're just a bit too shaky, and they're losing the games that they should be winning. And I think home to a second string Kobe side is a game that they really should have won.
All right, so a difficult evening for Reds. Before we move on to the final two games, Sam, obviously Deng's strike was an absolute worldie, and I think the question needs to be asked, especially after Yosuke Idaguchi's goal for Gunma Osaka last Wednesday night, do we need a new goal of the season poll?
I think we do. I can't really separate the two goals. They're both fantastic. I mean, Idaguchi's is a volley from a corner, which is just the type of goal that everyone tries and very few pull off, and it was fantastic. But then this Deng shot is so sweetly struck. It's fantastic. I don't know, are you ready to give up on Marohashi and leave him out of the poll, or is that still a hill that you're willing to die on after the last poll? But I'd definitely be putting Furuhashi up against these two in a poll, and I think Furuhashi, I'd say, would have to take third place in that.
I'm prepared to let that go. As good as Yusuke Marahashi's goal was, yet the people spoke, and even though I did mention it again on a Wednesday night, yes, you can consider that dead and buried now. So yeah, if we can, let's get it out there for the people to vote on. Kyogo Furuhashi, Yosuke Idaguchi, or Thomas Deng, who is the clubhouse leader for J1 goal of the season. And Sam, if you can source some video clips and get something sorted out for us, that would be terrific. As you did the previous occasion. So, look forward to seeing what the people think. But, yeah, I might be biased as an Australian, but Deng's, especially the way it just smashes in off the post, it's just remarkable, isn't it?
Oh, it was absolutely glorious. I love a half volley. It just skips off the turf off the post. He's not hit a ball sweeter than that in his life. But it was just, a fantastic goal, and I don't want to sway a Twitter poll, but I think I'd be leaning towards Deng as well.
Rightio then. All right, we'll see what the people think. All right, well, let's finish off the match day with a very, very positive weekend for the two Yokohama clubs, and look out, the defending champions Yokohama F Marinos are into the top half of the table. For the first time all season, they nudged their way up to ninth with their win on Wednesday night, and they edged up another spot to eighth after winning 3-1 at home over Hiroshima on Sunday night. Marcos Junior gave them a 44th minute lead with a crisp first time finish. Leandro Pereira headed in Reina's free kick 8 minutes into the second half to equalise for San Freche, but then just 7 minutes later on the hour, new boy Junior Santos thundered home a header from Tiraton's cross to make it 2-1. And, a couple of chances at either end before Eric's smart finish in off the post from Takahiro Ogihara's through ball in the 93rd minute wrapped up the points for F. Marino. So, two wins in a week for the defending champions, Sam. We were kind of waiting, I suppose, for them to click into gear. I've obviously already written them off from title contention, so I stand to have a massive egg on my face, obviously, if they do kick into gear and get close to Kawasaki or whoever comes close to nudging Kawasaki off top spot. But, how impressed have you been with them over these two games in the past week? Have they actually been up a level at all, or are they just getting results where earlier on in the season things weren't quite going for them?
I'd say the second half of this game against Hiroshima was the best I've seen them play all season. I think the game in midweek was a kind of exhibition for Ange Ball, and both teams forgot to defend and they just went out and just played a really great game for the neutral, but it's not necessarily going to beat most teams. I think Shimizu was so open, and Yokohama, they're the perfect team for Yokohama to play. They're playing the same game as each other, but Yokohama play it on a better level. So they're always, I think, going to win that game. Shimizu made it close towards the end, but in general, I think Yokohama were pretty comfortable, but they were against a team that were allowing them to be comfortable. So I didn't take too much from that game. I just think that was always going to be a bit of a shootout. This one against San Freccia, who aren't going to let them play the way that they want, or at least try not to. And then for the first half, I thought maybe San Freccia slightly edged it. They had the better chances early on, but nothing major. And it took a beautiful piece of play to open the score and just be before half-time. This is exactly how they'd want to play. The interplay between Maeda and Santos and finally Marcos Jr. was terrific. And then they took that on second half after a bit of poor defending from it was a pretty unchallenged header for Pereira. The park didn't really get close to it. But otherwise from that, they kind of looked like the Marinos of last season. A lot of possession, really good football, took their goals well. Junior Santos has come out and had a terrific week, the best week of his career in Japan by a mile, because he's on loan from Kashua, where the last season and a half he's done the grand total of nothing. He's barely played a game. I think he's played eight times for Kashua, didn't do a lot. Usually on the periphery, the victim of the foreign quota rule, so he was usually the one sitting out. But he's shown that there are some good facets to his game. I think terrific in the air, especially, and obviously he got his goal, but generally his hold-up play was good. He adds a little bit of a different dimension to that attack, which they don't necessarily have with Eric playing up front or Edgar Jr. necessarily. They're a lot better on their feet, but it's good to see Yokohama try and mix it up a little bit, as they have to. They need a bit of a plan B, but generally their plan A worked really well second half. Eric was terrific. I thought Maeda played well. I thought Nakagawa was better than he has been all season. Not quite still to the level he has been, but there were definitely positive signs there, and Yokohama look like, just based on the evidence of this second half, if they can keep that going, then yeah, they should be able to move up the table. But it's just, we've seen them in fits and starts this season look good, but then they've dropped off again. So it's just, can they keep this consistency going when they have to change their team so often? And this season, it hasn't really worked. They haven't been able to keep the level of performance up throughout the games from Saturday to Wednesday and so on. And they're going to have to, if they're going to climb and be a title contender or an ACL contender this season. And yeah, I'm not 100% convinced on that, but there were good signs second half.
All right, well, yeah, we're going to come on to what's shaping as a potentially a pivotal month for, Yokohama F. Marinos if they want to have a say at the sharp end of the table this season. But, yeah, I did want to ask you about, you've already talked at a decent amount of length there about Junior Santos, who's announced himself with a bang, no question, but as has Daizen Maeda, Sam. We wondered whether he was going to get lost in the shuffle at F Marinos, but he's basically come in and started the first two league games that he's been available for, as far as I'm aware. How has he looked? He look like he's fitted in straight away? Obviously, Ange Postecoglou has loved what he's seen in training, I presume, to throw him straight in and start the last two games.
Yeah, he must be doing something right. I don't think he's played necessarily to the right at the top level that he maybe is capable of or will be once he gets more familiar with the way that they're going to play. I think he played midweek and played 45 minutes, didn't offer too much, but he had the header in the previous game. So he's definitely been involved. This was his best performance in terms of the way he linked up with everyone and, yeah, looked to get involved a lot more. But there are a few, like, his main, like, talent is really his, attribute would be his pace, which is not necessarily the sort of attribute you need for playing for Yokohama. You might want to be maybe in an FC Tokyo team where you're going to counter-attack a lot more and use that. So he has to adapt a lot more. He's not going to be running in behind too often. A lot of it is going to be defences sat deep and he has to play his way through. So it's going to be a little bit of time for him to adapt, but he's definitely trying. He's definitely getting on the ball. He's looking to try... Yeah, and join in with the creativity and whatnot. He's not necessarily played up front, which I thought maybe if you're going to try and utilise him to the best of his ability, then maybe that would be the way. But he's trying on this left wing. I think he's improved as the games have gone on. So hopefully, maybe give it a month or so, then maybe he will really have adapted and be that sort of player that they need. But yeah, I just think at the moment, he's still a little bit of adapting to do for him to really thrive in this Marinos system.
Okay, then. So, yeah, I mentioned a potentially pivotal month. Obviously, they've just won their last two games. So, I guess as far as Ange Postecoglou is concerned, it's already begun and they're already started their march up the table. Well, it continues, then you might say, this Wednesday when they host Sapporo in another of the rescheduled games for the three ACL clubs. We've already mentioned Kobe's and FC Tokyo's. So the F Marinos Sapporo game is pulled out of match day 29 and will be played this Wednesday night. And as we get closer to the halfway mark of the season, as this run of games rolls on, they will then play away at Kobe on Saturday before they face the current top three in the table in match days 14, 15 and 16. They host Kawasaki, they visit Nagoya and then they host Cerezo Osaka in match day 16, which means that by that stage Yokohama will have played half their games because obviously the Sapporo game has been moved up. So they will have played 17. By that point, they will be halfway through and it'll be really, really fascinating to see where they sit in the table after so many key games. F Marinos picking up their form in recent weeks and they're getting the results to go along with that. A 3-1 home win over Hiroshima. The only game of the match day to be played on Saturday ended with Yokohama FC returning from Shimizu with a 3-2 victory. A couple of goals for the Yusuke's here, Sam, a Yusuke Minagawa, and our new favourite Yusuke Matsuo. It was Koki Saito, though, who gave Yokohama FC a somewhat fortunate lead in the 26th minute. His strike from out on the right took a deflection and arced over Togo Umeda in the Shimizu net. Shota Kaneko finished smartly through the Yokohama FC keeper Yuta Minami's legs a minute before half time, but there was no time for Shimizu to rest on their laurels having drawn level because Yusuke Minagawa headed in a cross from deep on the right in stoppage time to send Yokohama FC into the sheds ahead. Then, Sam, Yusuke Matsuo, he's dribbled from inside his own half and ultimately finished extremely in an extremely composed fashion after, running basically half the length of the pitch. This guy is, looks like he could be anything.
Yeah, he was making himself look to be a young Gareth Bale the way he was playing in this game and in previous games. Terrific. I mean, I don't think the defending is terrific, but for him to just breeze past him as if he wasn't there, that was fantastic, the athleticism. But then just to show the composure that he has done in the last few games, actually, in front of goal to finish, it's just terrific. I mean, yeah, as you say, he could be anything. I know that there are a lot of teams that are looking into Matsuo as a definite option. I mean, as good as Yokohama, I think, have been playing the last few weeks, I think his ultimate level has got, obviously, he's going to be higher than Yokohama, and I can definitely see him being with another J-League club next year, and then who knows from then on. I think he's been terrific. I think I'm glad that he's been given the chance. I heard a lot about him from his time in J2. Charlie Houghton was a massive fan of him, so I was looking forward to see him play. And he got injured, I think, just during the lockdown period. Didn't really start games from the resumption. But since he's come back in, he's been magnificent. And Yokohama as a whole have been a breath of fresh air, really. They just going for games, which is really good to see. They thrashed, a 4-2 thrashing of Shonan last week, and then this game they were again terrific. A little bit fortunate, like as you mentioned, with the Saito goal, and then I think Minagawa is offside for his goal, but you make your own luck, I suppose. And I thought the positivity that they've shown has been rewarded, and Matsuo has been at the forefront of it. He's been absolutely terrific.
Yes, indeed. So that was 5 minutes into the second half. Matsuo put Yokohama FC 3-1 up. And there was some late drama, just for a change, at Shimizu, as Ryo Takeuchi made it 3-2 in the 93rd minute. And there was still time for Dutra to head at Yuta Minami in the Yokohama FC goal and then fire a free kick into the wall with the last kick of the game. So Shimizu, right at the death, did have their chances to make it 3-3 and steal a point. But ultimately, Yokohama FC, their second win in a week. And things definitely looking up for the sky blue half of Yokohama. Not only their second win in a week, it's their third straight win, as obviously Sam mentioned, the big win over Shonan last weekend. They'd won 1-0 at home over Kashima Antlers in midweek. So things going well for both of the Yokohama sides this past week, and that's very, very good to see. And we've mentioned that there are two games coming up in midweek on Wednesday for the ACL clubs, but then we move on to the weekend and match day 13. Sam, obviously, Kawasaki, they're obviously going to be a big draw wherever they go, and if they can get back to winning ways at Kobe on Wednesday, then they'll expect to carry on when they host Shimizu. That's probably by no means the pick of the games. What have you picked out that our listeners who might be interested in tuning into a game on the weekend, where do you think they should direct their attention?
Well, they can't do too much wrong, really, with the slate of fixtures that we've got. There are so many terrific games. The one I'd probably go for would be Kashima Racer versus Kashima Antlers. I think both teams are kind of a little bit, sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not. You don't really know what's going to what sort of team is going to come out for both of these teams, but both kind of need victories if they want to be ACL contenders, especially Kashima at the moment, who are the closer. Hopefully Olunga will get back into form. I just think both teams on their day can play really terrific football, and I think they're both quite big names in the J-League, so it's got that sort of feel about the contest. So I'd really, I think that game would be my pick. But in terms of just you've got to look at Sapporo versus Nagoya. I think Nagoya, they can, on their day, play as well as they did this week, as well as they did against Urara. And Sapporo are a team that are never, ever going to defend. They're always a good value to watch. So I think that game's up there. And then in terms of intrigue, more so than anything else, I think Gamba Tokyo for that battle between teams try on the edge of a title challenge, maybe ACL football. I think both of those teams will want a victory in that game. It looks a really interesting one on paper. But as I say, I don't think you can do too much wrong with the games this weekend. Kobe, Yokohama is the game, I think, selected for TV over here. And, I mean, there should be goals galore in that game. But, yeah, it looks a really, really interesting slate of fixtures. Other than the Tokyo game, is there one that you've got your eye on?
Yeah, I like your Kashima shout. And also, yeah, I think Kobe, Yokohama, the 6 o'clock game on Saturday night, that could be anything. So, yeah, it's that should be absolutely fascinating. But yeah, you're right. Up and down the slate, there are really interesting fixtures. Obviously, seven of them will take place on Saturday, and then just the one on the Sunday with the Yokohama FC hosting Cerezo Osaka. So yeah, with Yokohama FC buzzing off the back of three straight wins, they could pose a serious threat to second place Cerezo. So yeah, don't underestimate that game either, listeners. If you're at a loose end on Sunday evening, that's one definitely worth checking out. Yeah, as for Tokyo, I'm never confident about going to Gamba, but I don't think we have a terrible record there. But again, no, touch wood, I don't want to jinx anything. But yeah, it should be, yeah, as you say, an interesting game. I don't think either of those teams are going to set the world on fire. But yeah, it should be an interesting clash. And yeah, the season just rolls on, obviously, with, as I said, yeah, three games in midweek and then almost a full slate, obviously, with Tosu scheduled to return in match day 14. So we'll look forward to catching up with them. The players should definitely be well rested, Sam. So I don't know, they'll be absolutely running around like chickens with their heads cut off for the first 10 minutes of their first game, I suppose. But we shall see. All right, well, yeah, we've gone guestless for the second straight week, listeners. We obviously could have dialed up Neil Debnam, but we thought that would have been a little bit too cruel to call on Neil after Kawasaki's first loss of the season, especially after they had obviously flown out of the gates so impressively. But yeah, we will have Neil, obviously. We'll put the call in for Neil if he's available in weeks to come. And yeah, there are obviously plenty of our correspondents we could have called on, but yeah, Sam and I decided we'd handle things ourselves again this week. So Sam, yeah, I think we'll leave it there. Another thorough roundup of the top flight action, and yeah, look forward to doing it all again with you next week.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot to wrap up next week. It should be an exciting week again as we roll on. So, yeah, looking forward to catching up with you next week.
Terrific stuff. All right, well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to sign up to support the podcast, please head to patreon.com/JTalkPod. You can do so for as little as $1. A month. And of course, we would also like to thank you, dear listener, for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week then to round up the midweek action as well as the full slate of games from J1 Match Day 13. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.